Purim is coming, and we know how much you miss your family and friends in Israel. Gili's Goodies can help you send them some amazing Mishloach Manot this year. You're not just sending another regular basket full of basic nash and junk food. We also have cakes and baskets available for birthdays, weddings, bar mitzvahs, or a new baby. Missing an Israeli simcha? Just go online to gilisgoodies.com, order the perfect basket, and let someone special know you're thinking about them.
IsraelNationalRadio.com. You know you want to listen because you know that it's the bomb, bringing you stories from all over the world, bringing you stories that you never ever heard, bringing you stories and bringing you the news. Israel National Radio, yo, pay your dues.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Courage.
Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, let my people go.
Audacity.
Anu machuzim bazot al hakamat medina yehudit di eretz Yisrael, di medinat Yisrael.
History. Miracle.
Shalom, shalom forever.
Israel.
Broadcasting from Bethel, just north of Jerusalem, D.C. That's right, Jerusalem, David's capital. King David's capital.
King David's
capital. King David's capital. And now, Tamar Yonah.
Tonight's show is called Good Muslims. Good Muslims. There are good Muslims out there. There are good people. There are bad people in every religion, in every country, in every nation, in every segment of society, good and bad. Tonight we're going to concentrate on the good Muslims. And here to talk about that, we have as our guest Aryeh Lowell Gallen. He is the author of Cracking the Quran Code, God's Land, Torah, and People Covenants with Israel in the Quran and Islamic Tradition. So if you have any comments or questions during the show, y'all, and you want to come on and ask or comment, you can do so. If you're listening live, that means if it's between 7 and 8 p.m. Holy Time right here in the Land of Israel, or if it's between 12 noon to 1 p.m., it means that the show is broadcasting live, and you can call in and you can ask our guest a question. Again, our guest is Aryeh Lowell Gallen and the author of Cracking the Quran Code. Welcome to the show, Aryeh.
Thanks, Tamar.
Well, we hear so many bad things about the Muslims because we hear when the news talks about them, it's usually about terrorism or riots or intolerance. And yet you wrote a book that is supposed to somehow look for things that we have in common, concentrate on that, try to make peace with our cousins. So why don't you start from wherever you want to start?
Thanks. I wrote Cracking the Quran Code, God's Land, Torah, and People Covenants with Israel in the Quran and Islamic Tradition, which is available through Lulu.com, as well as retailers around the world such as Amazon and Barnes & Nobles, to help make the world more aware of Muslims and Muslim-majority nations that are pro-American and pro-Israel, and to respect Christians and Jews as what the Quran calls people of the book.
Okay. So we're all people of the book, at least here at the here in Israel. But, you know, all three major religions, the Christianity also and Islam, all recognize the Torah as being divine. They all believe that Moses went up to Mount Sinai, got the Ten Commandments, got the Torah from God. So there's no argument there. So where else are you looking for things in common and how we're going to use this to bridge our gaps?
According to our book, which I wrote in honor and based on the teachings of Dr. Asher Eder of Jerusalem, Israel, and Sheikh Abdul Hadi Palazzi of Rome, Italy, who serve as co-founders and co-chairmen of the Islam Israel Fellowship of the Root and Branch Association Limited, the Quran, as our Tanakh, affirms the land Torah and people covenants, meaning God gave the land of Israel to the children of Israel, God gave his Torah to the children of Israel, and God commanded the children of Israel to believe in him and to live faithfully according to his Torah in the land of Israel.
Okay, but why don't the Muslims know that?
Well, the Muslims do know that. And what I would like to do to begin the show is to take a roll of honor of Muslim majority nations which exist right now today who are very friendly to Israel. So let's name them if we may. All the Central Asian Sunni Muslim majority, ethnic Turkic majority nations that became free when the Soviet Union collapsed on December 31st, 1991, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Tajikistan, Azerbaijan and the Caucasus, Turkey, the people, not the ruling party, which is a Muslim brotherhood equals Wahhabi murderhood party, very dangerous, the people of Turkey in general, Albania and the Balkans, and Nigeria and Sierra Leone in Africa.
Okay. When we had talked before the show, and I told you, I just want all of our listeners to know, I told R.A. Lowell Gallen, the author of this book, that I'm going to challenge him because what we see today in the news does not reflect on what you're writing about in your book. And I know that there are good Muslims. However, unfortunately, the good ones are silent. And that's because I'm assuming that they're intimidated by the jihadists. And okay, but when you're saying that, you know, we have these, you know, more or less good relations with Islamic countries or nations that are mostly Islamic. I went to do a little bit of research about that. You gave places like Uzbekistan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I just want to read you something here. I hope I still have it here. Where it talks about Uzbekistan. Okay. So if you go to Wikipedia and you do a little bit of research on you know, the background of Uzbekistan, its you know, population and everything. It says here, Uzbekistan, It was the end of the Soviet power that when Islam started to reemerge amongst its masses, because we all know the Soviet Union basically outlawed religion. People needed to be atheists in a communistic society. So after the fall of the Soviet Union, Uzbekistan had an upsurge of of religion and Islam, and 90-some% of their population are Islamic, like you say. But it said so let me just read it here. It says, in Uzbekistan, the end of Soviet power did not bring an upsurge of fundamentalism, as many had predicted, but rather a gradual reacquaintance with the precepts of the faith. However, after the year 2000, which means sometime after the year 2000, 2001 was the Twin Towers, and that's when the Muslims showed their might in the world and defeated the big Satan, in a sense. They invaded their shores, and they got emboldened. So they say, however, after the year 2000, there seems to be a rise of support in favor of the Islamists. So these countries that you mentioned were mostly old satellite countries of the Soviet Union, which was basically atheistic, and they weren't into fundamental Islam, but that's the way that these Islamic nations are going today. So how long will we have a, you know, basic okay relationship with Uzbekistan that we can fly to their airport in order to go to Thailand when our youth want to go to the Far East and they have to stop off in Uzbekistan?
Okay, the answer to that takes us to who's blowing up the world, who's paying for it, and who's doing business with them in the West.
Okay.
What the Central Asian countries have, and they've been Muslim for about 1,000 years, what the Soviets did was they blocked the influx of Wahhabi, quote-unquote, Islam. And that protected the people there in their traditional mild form of Sunni Islam with a heavy Sufi influence. So let's go to who's blowing up the world. That's an easy one. 99% of your global, quote-unquote, Muslim mass murder is Wahhabi mass murder. Wahhabis, as they are called by Sunnis and Shiites, call themselves Salafis. Wahhabism is the state religion of Saudi Arabia. Ground zero for global Muslim mass murder is Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the Gulf states. They're the ones who are paying for it. They are not allies of the United States or the West. There's nothing moderate about them. You're talking about state-sponsored terrorism from the ruling tribal crime families down. Most of the Muslim, quote-unquote, mass murder equals terror groups that we hear of, Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, which is the Palestinian branch of the International Muslim Brotherhood, and the Taliban, are all Wahhabi in theology and Saudi Arabian, Kuwaiti, and Gulf state in funding. those ruling crime families have to be removed from power, their assets seized worldwide, and the global Wahhabi mass murder movements they support shut down. Every country in Central Asia, every Muslim country, has a Wahhabi insurgency. And the Uzbeks have a very simple way of dealing with that. They kill them, which is exactly what we should do with Hamas in Gaza. They're very dangerous. Okay?
We should have you as a defense minister.
What
did
you say?
I said we should have you as our defense minister. Kill,
well,
kill
I would vote for Giuliani as prime minister and Bratton as defense minister. A street-smart Irish and Italian would take care of the situation very quickly. They would not permit missiles to be launched at Bensonhurst and Queens or their neighborhoods. It wouldn't go on for more than 5 seconds. If you go to the Western countries, the public face of quote-unquote Islam, the community centers, the mosques, the public interest organizations like CARE in the United States, most of them are Wahhabi in theology and Saudi Arabian, Kuwaiti, and Gulf State in funding. They're Potemkin village fantasy operations which have little or no local constituency. Okay? And Wahhabi money flows through Saudi Arabian, Kuwaiti, and Gulf State money flows through every academic institution in the Western world. Centers of Islamic studies are corrupted. I can't take anything most of these places say seriously. These are the people that are the buddies of the businessmen doing business with our businessmen. It's all about oil and money and the profits from the oil.
All right. I'm going to ask you another question because, granted, there are good Muslims. There are good Jews. There are bad Jews. There are good Christians, bad Christians. Good Muslims, bad Muslims. My problem is that there's not enough of the good Muslims, and they're not voiced for us at all. I don't see any Peace Now Muslim groups of good Muslims. I'm not even expecting anything from the bad Muslims. I mean, when I say bad Muslims, I mean ones who are intolerant and want to dominate the world and want to kill you in order to do it, okay? But for the good, the Muslims who just, they believe in Allah, they believe in the Quran, fine, no problem, you know, they live their life in somewhere, wherever they're living it, and they're not bothering anybody else, okay. But these people aren't speaking up. And when you look at Egypt, just when we saw the revolution take place over there, and they're not Wahhabi in Egypt, yet in the streets, you see the people who are the young people who are out in the streets, the university students, and mixture of the, you know, the older Islamic crowd as well. They're putting Jewish, Magen David, a Jewish star on Mubarak's picture. They burned American flag, or they stepped on it, and they stepped on it and burned the Israeli flag. I mean, we see this not just in Wahhabi or Saudi Arabia. We see it in Syria. We see it in Lebanon. We see it in Egypt. We see it everywhere. So how do you answer that question?
Jew hatred, Israel hatred, and Holocaust denial have been used traditionally by the Arab and Muslim rulers to deflect the attention of their people from their own problems and failures. That's number one. Number two is the Muslim Brotherhood Party in Egypt is a Wahhabi party. The Muslim Brotherhood, very early on, adopted the Wahhabi theology. Secular Nasserianism, the Arab national movements, Jew hatred, Israel hatred, was a stock element in what they were teaching people. What was actually notable about the demonstrations in Egypt and most of the Muslim world is how little it had to do with Jews and Israel. Yes, there's a predictable, someone burned a picture of Mubarak with a Star of David on it. What was notable was how exceptional that was. I watched this on TV from the United States. If you actually listen to what the people were saying, what were they screaming about? In fact, I'll give you a good example of how this is true. There's a very interesting anti-Israel website, Global Resources in Toronto, Canada, run by Professor Michelle Khosodovsky, very radically, radical, radical left anti-Israel, as in we shouldn't be here, one state, two state, no state. And what were they screaming about the last few weeks, his authors? What they were screaming about, his own authors, was, why aren't the demonstrators screaming about Israel and the poor Palestinians and the settlers? There you have it, from the radical European left itself. They themselves noticed this. So So if you want to focus on one incident or two incidents, or Yusuf Qaradawi, who is the head of the International Muslim Brotherhood, and I don't believe he will be, he's an old man to begin with, I don't think he's going to be around much longer, and I don't personally think he's going to die a natural death. And he spoke to his discovery over there in Egypt, and the predictable will liberate Jerusalem. If you want to focus on that, you can. But if you want to take it in terms of total real time of what these people were screaming about, it's a small fraction of what actually went on. And what's notable is what didn't go on. And the proof in the pudding is that, just go check Global Resource of Professor Michelle Huska-Duffy, as anti-Israel can be. And there's article after article after article screaming, why aren't they screaming about the Palestinians and the settlements?
But yet, if their leaders will say, let's go to war against Israel, they're going to be lining up in their army uniforms and going to war against Israel, as they did in 1948, and as they did in 56, and as they did in 73, and as they did in 81 or 82 actually. I'm not convinced still, but I'm gonna be quiet right now, and I want you to tell us about your book and tell us all the good things that we need to know, because I really want to like my neighbors. I don't want to have wars with them. I don't want them to hate me. I want to get along with everybody. Let's all just have a good life, and I'm sure most people feel that way. So let's be a little bit positive right now, and I'll challenge you a little bit later again if I have any more to challenge you. Go ahead.
Well, why don't we start with talking about the kinds of Muslims that Sheikh Palazzi and Dr. Ader and I work with. We don't work with peaceful Muslims. We don't work with Muslims whose religion is a religion of peace. We work with Muslims whose religion is a religion of war. For example, when the so-called Second Intifada, i.e. Second Philistine Chaos Pogrom, began on Rosh Hashanah in 2000, who was left to die in Joseph's tomb, in whose arms? Jewish soldiers? No. Jewish generals in the Israeli army left to die. Madhat Yusuf, a Druze from Beit John in the Galilee, slowly bleeding to death in the arms of his officer Omar Suwaid from the Bedouin Muslim village of Salama, north of the Sea of Galilee, where all the men are employed generations now. They serve the State of Israel and the police, the border police, the army, and other crack combat units, as do numerous Bedouin. These are people of war prepared to fight and die for the State of Israel. Madhat Yusuf, the Druze, died in the arm of a Bedouin Muslim defending Joseph's tomb, abandoned to their fate by a Jewish general staff, which had a so-called peace process.
You're correct.
With peaceful Muslims. I work with Muslims that live and die. And another one from the Suwaid clan was captured at Hardav, along with two Jews, and murdered in Lebanon. Remember that a couple of years ago when the bodies came back?
Yes, but you know, the statistics are, or what we're seeing in the news today, is that though the Druze, who were more, they were basically whoever ruled them they were loyal to, we see today that there's a movement of the Druze not to serve in the army now, and they're demonstrating against Israel and Israeli authorities, and we see a movement towards the more Islamic spectrum.
Okay, when you say Islamic, what you really mean is Wahhabi, number one. And number two, real peace, and this is an important principle to me, real, and I say it in the book, real peace between the children of Israel and the children of Ishmael in the land of Israel will be made tribe by tribe, clan by clan, family by family, because that's how this society is structured. There'll be those who will be with us, such as Ishmael Khaldi, who is the advisor to Foreign Minister Lieberman, who is the consul from the Khawalid tribe, which is near Zichron Yaakov. His tribe is with us. He was in the army, combat soldier. He spoke in our lecture series at the Israel Center and will speak again in a few weeks. They'll be with us. The people of Salama, the Suwaid clan, will be with us. It varies very much tribe by tribe, clan by clan, and family by family. And there's fascinating research being done by Tzvi Messinai on those Arabs, quote-unquote, who have Jewish roots. He has a documentary about it. Anyone can go to YouTube or to his website and see his documentary, where he goes into these little villages and meets people and now prepared to talk openly about the Jewish roots of their families. As well, a small but increasing number of Christian and Muslim Arabs from the Galilee have been volunteering for service as combat soldiers in the IDF. I have a cover story from, was it Ma'ariv Yedinot, for a couple of years ago, writing about them. And I spoke to one of the authors who said, we're intentionally downplaying this because we don't want to cause danger to the families of these primary boys, not girls. So you have to take it in their society as tribal, tribe by tribe, clan by clan, and family by family in the land of Israel. Outside the land of Israel, it will depend. This country, yes, that country, no. Nigeria, which is a Muslim-majority nation, subsidizes tours with its oil wealth to Mecca and Medina of its Muslim population who can't afford to go. They also subsidized pilgrimages to Eretz Yisrael for their Christian population, about 30,000 to 50,000 a year. That's big bucks. They come here because their Muslim government subsidizes their religious pilgrimages to Jerusalem and the land of Israel. Furthermore, when the Knesset Christian Allies Caucus had a rally in Muslim-majority Sierra Leone for Israel, organized by local Christians, 70% of those who came were Muslims. And we wrote our book. My book is 420 pages. 200 of those pages are quotations from and traditional Islamic commentaries on critical verses in the Quran that deal with Jerusalem, the first, second, and third temples, and the land, Torah, and people covenants to give those who are our allies the ammunition they need to talk to their own people. And I'm very gratified, slowly but surely, reference to our book is starting to pop up, and not unfavorable, on Muslim websites in places like Indonesia.
Indonesia, which is a real concentration of Muslims.
Gets to another point. Well, most of the world's, most of the Arabs are Muslims. Most of the world's Muslims are not Arabs. The largest population Muslim nation, majority nations in the world are Indonesia first, India second, and Bangladesh third. And I have a dedication in my book, which was first published in ebook form on December 31st, 2009, dedicated to Abdurrahman Wahid, the president of Indonesia, who died the night before, who openly called for years for all Muslim nations to recognize the state of Israel as it is now. And I have an interview with him, verbatim, and anyone can click on the link from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, with Abdurrahman Wahid from 2002, where he says this, and he kept saying it over and over again.
All right, we're just about to get the music coming on the show, which means that it's time to take a break, but we're going to be right back. We're speaking with our guest, Aryeh Lowell Gallen, and he's the author of the book Cracking the Quran Code, God's Land, Torah, and People Covenants with Israel in the Quran and Islamic Tradition. And we're going to be asking him when he gets back to read us a couple of verses from the Quran that show that the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people. And other things that should hopefully convince Muslims to be more loving to their cousins. And why would the Muslims like us? We're going to ask them that as well.
IsraelNationalRadio.com. You know you want to listen because you know that it's the bomb. Bringing you stories from all over the world. Bringing you stories that you never ever heard. Bringing you stories and bringing you the news. Israel National Radio. Yo, pay your dues.
A study at the Urological Clinic in the Soroka Hospital in Israel found that those taking Apuncha capsules experienced significant relief from bladder or urinary problems. Don't just suffer. Contact the Priso Company for natural herbal remedies. Made from the Apuncha flower grown right here in Israel. Visit their website at www.priso.com. www.priso.com. That's P-R-I-S-S-O.com.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Courage.
Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, let my people go.
Audacity.
Anu makrizim bazot, ala kamat medina yudit mi eret Israel, mi medinat Israel.
History. Miracle.
No more war.
Hope.
No more bloodshed. Shalom, shalom forever.
Israel.
broadcasting from Bethel, just north of Jerusalem, D.C. That's right, Jerusalem, David's capital. King David's capital.
King David's capital.
King David's capital. And now, Tamar Yonah.
All right, we're talking about good Muslims and maybe, quite possibly, how we can make more of them. Because we sure need them. Cracking the Quran code, God's land, Torah, and people covenants with Israel in the Quran and Islamic tradition. Our guest tonight is the author of that book, Aryeh Lowell Gallen, and he's here talking about the Quran and how there are positive things in the Quran about the Jewish people, and that if the Muslims learned this more and concentrated on it more, they could be even... Israel could have a lot more friends in the region than we do now. And if you have any comments or questions, you want to join in the interview and interview our guest yourself, you can call in 1-800-270-4288. That's a free phone call for all of our listeners in the United States, Canada, and Israel. 1-800-270-4288. Welcome back to the show, Aryeh Lowell Gallen.
Thanks.
Okay, so why don't you read us, why don't you start us out with a few quotes, and I'd like to tell all of our listeners, get out your pencil and paper or get to your keyboard and type, type this, write this down. So the next time, the Muslims say, you're at a demonstration, they say, Israel, the Jews are occupiers of the land and get out of Palestine, you can throw the verses of the Quran into their faces. So go ahead, Lowell.
Thanks. First of all, I want to remind your listeners, many of whom I think would agree, that from our perspective, and Sheikh Palazzi says this is what the kind of Islam he represents teaches, the God of Israel commands all nations. I stress commands. This is not a policy option. Commands all nations to believe in him, to honor and to observe his Noahide covenant and laws, and to honor his land, Torah, and people covenants with Israel. And furthermore, the time given for compliance with this command is not unlimited, and we believe that that time period is coming to an end. Now, let's look at some of those verses. Before we do, I want to say which translation we used. Sheikh Palazzi recommended to use the translation of and commentary on the Quran by Professor Abdullah Yusuf Ali. The most popular translation and commentary into English, honored by the entire Muslim world. Just type in his name and press enter and you will see that immediately. He was a professor of classics at Cambridge University from an upper-class Indian Muslim family, died in 1953. And we use this, and no one could say, that's a mistranslation. That's a Zionist translation. Our commentators don't say that. Oh, yes, they do. And furthermore, his translation and commentary are so favorable to us that after his death, the Saudi Arabians made sure to publish numerous editions that are fraudulent, and that are, as we have the joke about Shakespeare in Yiddish for toy, Shakespeare for Teutsch and for Besset, as in translated into Yiddish and improved. They took out the references that he has in his commentary, positive references to Judaism, Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism. They're not there in the Saudi versions. They didn't believe Allah could be translated as God, so they for Teutsch and for Besset it back to Allah. There are two editions we know of that are true to the original 1938 third edition from Lahore in what is now Pakistan. One is published by Tahrik-i-Tarsil Quran in Elmhurst, New York, and I drove there to pick up a copy. Another is published by Good Word Books in India, which promotes is a publishing house of Maulana Wahiduddin Khan, a Indian Muslim spiritual leader who's also a Pathan. I met his son last week at the Jerusalem Book Fair, and I asked him, I know that most people from India and Pakistan who have the last name Khan, K-H-A-N, are Pathans. Are you Pathans? He said, yes, several hundred years ago we came here from the mountains of Afghanistan and what is now Pakistan. I said, that's wonderful. I know about your traditions, that you're descended from the lost tribe, 10 tribes of Israel. He said, yes, of course. And the endorsement that I have in the first two pages of my book by Fazal Rahman Afridi, a Pathan pro-Israel activist and journalist in Paris, a political refugee from Pakistan who just received his legalization papers from the French government for his political refugee status. He is proudly what he believes a descendant of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. You're talking about 49 million people, 24 million up in the mountains of Afghanistan and Pakistan, and 24 million in the diaspora around the world. And these are mild Sunni Muslims with a heavy Sufi influence. The Taliban are a new addition with a very small number of local, tragically Pathan boys, many of whom are orphans who've never known anything but war since the Soviet invasion in 1978. They had their own genocide there. And what I would like to see NATO do is you go and you send in your Spetsnaz and your commando, elite commandos, you send them into those madrasas in northern Pakistan, rescue the boys, and let's not go into what they've been through in those madrasas where they're just trained to be suicide murderers and cannon fodder for the Saudi Arabians, the Kuwaitis, and the Gulf state, round up the Wahhabi teachers and kill them. And that is what the Soviet army did when it liberated the death camps as it went from the towards Berlin. They freed the prisoners. They rounded up the guards. And unless the prisoners said, and there were always a few, this guard helped us, there were such people. The Soviets shot them on the spot. And that's what I would like to see happen, because the traditional Islam of the Pathans has nothing to do with Wahhabi Talibanism. And every Pathan, all you have to do is talk to them, proudly believes he or she is a descendant of the lost 10 tribes of Israel, and who are you? Now that is a lot of firepower, okay? That's just one ethnic group in the Muslim world, as well as the ethnic Turkic peoples from the Bosporus to the borders of China. That's section 6 of my book, 180 million friends. So when anyone says, but I don't see them, well, maybe that's because no one talks about the fact there are daily flights from Tel Aviv to Tashkent, or the presidents of Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Uzbekistan paid state visits to Jerusalem within 1 year of becoming independent nations. And all you have to do is talk to people from there who live here, and they'll tell you they got along very well with their neighbors. Now let's go to those verses. And furthermore, when we get to verses, the ambassador of Uzbekistan to Israel, Rustam Isayev, 10 years ago. In my book, we have his greetings to our Noahide conference in 1998 and 1999, in which the ambassador of the most powerful Muslim nation in Central Asia, who proudly, their founding father is Tamerlan. That's their King Arthur. He writes, "We Uzbeks believe that the return of the Jews to the land of Israel now is a fulfillment of biblical and Quranic prophecy." Now, I realize we have the world's leading experts out there who say, no, that's not the true Islam. See, really, the Saudis, the Wahhabis got it right. So good. Kola kavod to you. You go contact the Uzbeks and say, really, you shouldn't have daily flights from Tashkent to Tel Aviv. You should be blowing yourself up on Ben Yehuda Street. And I would say, kola kavod to the Chachamim of Chelm. These people, you're talking about real firepower there. We have very strong relations with these nations, including military and everything, and possible trade, social, educational, military cooperation with them. Now, what was the ambassador talking about when he said, we believe the return of the Jews to the land of Israel? He put this in writing, and it's in our book. And some papers picked it up, like the Jewish Press, and printed it verbatim at that time. What is he referring to? Maybe he's ignorant because he hasn't talked to self-educated experts from the Jewish and Israeli world who will say, look, I'll tell you what your religion is. You're just ignorant. You should be blowing yourself up, and you should be a devotee of Yusuf al-Qaradawi and join the Muslim Brotherhood. And he'll say, thank you very much. He'll leave his embassy and he'll blow himself up in downtown Tel Aviv. And again, kol hakavod to the wise men of Chelm. I would say, let people define them for themselves what their religion is. And you can go, whoever you are, and speculate on the true Islam. This is their Islam. Now, let's look at some of those verses. Let's take one. We read in chapter 7 of the Quran, Surah Araf, the Heights, verse 137, quote, and we, now I have to add a footnote, whenever the Quran says we, it's God speaking, and we made a people considered weak and of no account, inheritors of lands in both east and west, lands whereon we sent down our blessings. The fair promise of your Lord was fulfilled for the children of Israel, because they had patience and constancy. And we leveled to the ground the great works and fine buildings which Pharaoh and his people erected with such pride. Well, what does that mean? Let's hear what Professor Abdullah Yusuf Ali comments. And in his commentary, as with Art Scroll, he gives you, well, Art Scroll is more specific. They'll cite the specific commentators. He'll say, most of our sages interpret it this way, and he's very honest intellectual. He'll say, and some of our sages interpret it that way, and sometimes he'll name them. And the reason the Muslim world respects him, again, just type in his name, enter on your browsers, is his summary of the majority Muslim commentators is the most true to those commentators. So what does Professor Ali say about the Heights chapter? Wait a minute, I didn't put down that the Heights is chapter 7. I should have put it. Verse 137 of chapter 7. Sorry about that. The Heights. Here's his commentary. Israel, which was despised, became a great and glorious nation under Solomon. He had goodly territory and was doubly blessed. His land and people were prosperous, and he was blessed with wisdom from God. His sway and his fame spread east and west, and thus God's promise to Israel was fulfilled. Note that Syria and Palestine had once been under the sway of Egypt. Translation into English, they were under the sway of the kingdom of David and Solomon, Syria and Palestine. That's just one verse. In my book, I have over 100 pages of verses and commentaries. And I challenge anyone out there in the Muslim world, and they're awfully quiet, say it ain't so, Joe, and they can't because it is so. And they have a problem. We're not saying Muhammad was a monkey and the Quran is a dish towel, so they can't pull a Salman Rushdie routine. What are they going to say? This is your prophet. This is your book. This is what your book says, and this is what your own commentators say it is. So drop your weapons. Because if you don't drop your weapons, the Quran talks about the war of Gog and Magog. And it says in one of the verses, when destruction, mass destruction, will come upon your world, would that we had listened to the prophet and the true teachers and not to those who misled us as we're burning in the fire. It's all in there. The whole biblical narrative, from we were given the land of Israel, so we sinned, and the first temple was destroyed, and we were exiled, and we came back, and the second temple was destroyed, and we'll come back at the end of days. It's all there, and the war of Gog and Magog, and on about the kingdom of David and Solomon. It's all there. So what about the negative verses? People could say, yeah, okay, that's great. What about the nasty things in the Quran about the children of Israel and Jews? The answer to that is very simple. Just like with the Tanakh, the principle is very simple. Any negative statements about the children of Israel in the Quran, which are nothing compared to what our own prophets say, I challenge anyone, go and read them. If you want shock therapy, what's about the joke? Someone goes to a psychiatrist, doctor, I need an analysis. Okay, you're stupid. I want a second opinion. You're ugly too. If you feel bad reading the negative verses in the Quran, go check them out in the Tanakh. And if you can read them in Hebrew, read the Hebrew. And if that doesn't make you feel bad enough, talk about reality therapy, IMS in the morning, read them on the commentators. There's no varnish. It's all very right. Direct and shocking about the failures when we failed of the children of Israel. But there's one point. Never, ever in the Tanakh, with all the negative statements about our failures, when we failed and why the temples were destroyed and we were sent into exile, are the basic land, Torah, and people covenants ever abrogated? God says, you're my people no matter what, and there are a lot of no matter what. And Ezekiel says, despite everything you've done, for the sake of, you're bad for my public relations. I'm bringing you back, and I'll fulfill all the promises. You make me sick. I'm doing it for me, not for you. This is exactly what you have to understand when you look at negative verses about failures of the children of Israel in those days or in the time when it was compiled. That are there. They never contradict. They must always be read within the context of the affirmation of God's land, Torah, and people covenants with Israel. When you see them like that, then they start to look very different when they're taken out of context.
All right, let me jump in here for a second with a question. I'm of all of the Arabs, or I should say, let's put Muslims, of all of the Muslims that you have talked to and brought these arguments that they should be, you know, respecting the Jewish people and their land and not trying to kick us out of here and blah, 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 blah. How many of these people agree with you that did not agree with you before? I'm not talking about the Pashtun people, you know, Muslims who think that they once, you know, came from a Jewish line and were converted, you know, hundreds and hundreds or a thousand years ago. I'm not talking about those guys. I'm talking about a real Muslim today that hates the Jewish people, hates Israel, wants to see, you know, Israel wiped out, and that you can convince him with these things that he's wrong, and he should all of a sudden do a turnaround.
First of all, it's important to use, from my perspective, proper terminology. The Pashtun don't believe they're Jews. They believe there were 12 tribes.
They're not Jews. They're not
okay.
Jews.
They don't believe they came from a Jewish background. They believe they came from an Israelite background, from the exile of the 10 tribes by the Assyrians.
Okay,
the
right.
Children
You're
of Israel
right.
The 12 sons of Jacob Israel. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two is...
But they were Jews. I mean, the tribes of Israel were Jews.
Israelites. The Jews of the tribe of Judah, one of the 12 tribes. It's an important distinction.
Okay, but they essentially were Jews. They kept the Torah. They went to the Beit HaMikdash. We're talking about that they were Jews, even though...
No, not Jews,
technically,
Israelites.
Technically, that's not their name, but go ahead.
They were Israelites. They left. When did they convert in mass to Islam? About 1,000 years ago, they converted to Islam. And what's remarkable about them is how many of their customs and traditions are similar to ours, their laws,
right.
Of pacht and wallet.
But that's irrelevant right now. Go ahead.
Now, don't think that we're naive enough that simply because we publish a book or Sheikh Palazzi teaches what he teaches, that all of a sudden, overnight, people who have been doped up on Jew hatred, Israel hatred, and Holocaust denial for 100 years are all of a sudden going to be dancing Hatikvah. It doesn't work that way. On the other hand, if we look at the astonishing developments in the Muslim and Arab world of the last 2 months, my reference in terms of a policy statement to understand what's going on, I wouldn't go to one of the think tanks, which had no predictive power whatsoever. I go to the 19th chapter of Isaiah, where Hashem talks about a divine wind that flows through Egypt and the entire Muslim world, where they rise up against a cruel ruler, and five of their cities call out on the God of Israel, and they start to learn Hebrew, and concludes with the very well-known words in verses 23 and 24 and 25, it says, "In that day shall there be a highway out of this Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrians shall come into Egypt, and the Egyptian into Assyria, and the Egyptians shall worship with the Assyrians. In that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the earth, for that the Lord of hosts have blessed him, saying, Blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my inheritance." In my opinion, when I want to understand what's going on, I look at it as Isaiah 19. And I'm very happy to say that a letter I wrote, my message to Egyptian freedom fighters from an American Israeli Jew, has been published in part in English, an Arabic translation, on the website of Michael Nabil Sanad, who is of Coptic Christian background and one of the freedom fighters. And last fall, got quite a bit of press coverage here in Israel because he was a conscientious objector. He refused. He's a veterinarian, about 25. He said, "I refuse to serve in the Egyptian army. Why? I don't want to be in an army where I have to injure or kill Jews. I don't want to fight with Israel." He said, "Furthermore, the Arabs are responsible for the mess there. And many of us here in Egypt admire Israel."
Mm-hmm. So, but not enough, because let me just read you a few stats here, because, and I actually read this out on another show, and I'm not sure exactly the exact percentage, but approximately 80-some% of Egyptians today want Sharia law, and 80% or so support executing a person that converts from Islam to another religion, and as I'm reading this from what Samuel from the virtual studio put up for me, and we talked about this last week again, and 10% of Egypt is Christian. So take that from all the Egyptians. You know, we're dealing with a population. Sure, they're in every nation there are some people. I mean, there are Germans who didn't hate Jews also. But as a national generalization, we're dealing with an enemy that hates us, and I don't see that the good ones, and there are good Muslims, but I don't see them standing up. I don't see them making any peace movement groups. I don't see them. I don't hear them. Nobody does, and we want to hear them. So we only have about 1 minute left of the show, and I really want people to understand what your book is about. So tell our listeners why they would want to buy your book.
Hope your listeners would want to buy our book, which is on sale at Lulu.com and major retailers around the world, such as Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com, so they can learn about Muslims in general and Arabs in particular, a little bit about those who are already allies of Israel. And let's leave out the term good for me, those who are willing to fight with us and for us and who want to know what the Quran says according to the traditional commentators. And again, no one is talking Pollyanna here, that we're going to wave a wand and the dark cloud of Wahhabism is just simply going to vanish from the Muslim world. Their own traditions say that in the very end, their world will be engulfed with apostasy and heresy and rebellion against God. And according to Sheikh Palazzi, that's what's happened. And furthermore, according to Sheikh Palazzi, the disaster that the Arab world in particular and Muslim world in general is, in every objective measure, a third of the people, adults, can't read and write, mass poverty, a few people are rich, most people are poor, no democracy, no this, no that. He said that's the real Nakba of 1948, was refusing to welcome the Jews back, and they've been cursed for it.
All right. Well, let's hope that they learn from that. Thank you so much for being on the show. Ari Lowell Gallen, Cracking the Quran Code, God's Land, Torah and People Covenants with Israel in the Quran and Islamic Tradition. And I say, Ken Yerbou, it should multiply the good Muslims, the Muslims who want to welcome the Jews to Israel and fight for the Jewish people, because we are right in our cause and they should join us. Thanks, everyone, for being with us.
Hi, this is Greg from Woodbury, Minnesota. Here in Israel, visiting for my second time. I hope for sure it's not my last time. And I'm a supporter of Israel and Arutz Sheva Radio. Don't touch that dial. It's Arutz Sheva Radio. IsraelNationalRadio.com.
Perry from Delano, Minnesota, in the United States of America. Tune in to Israel National Radio. Let me tell you, they got it all going on.
My name is Marissa. I'm 17 years old, and I'm visiting Israel. Tune in to IsraelNationalRadio.com.